This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Friday, August 17th. I'm Angela Denning. If you think some of the forest looks a little off-color, well, you're right. Hemlock trees in parts of Southeast are turning brown from a sawfly outbreak. But there's not much to worry about. Here's more on that. The U.S. Forest Service started getting a lot of calls about yellowish trees on hillsides in Southeast Alaska this month. The color is from dying hemlock leaves, which were damaged by an insect. So they got their experts to look into it.
This year has just been extraordinary to see the amount of activity.
Elizabeth Graham is an entomologist who works with the Forest Service in Juneau in a division called Forest Health Protection. And she's really into bugs.
They are just so cool, the things that insects can do.
The sawfly's pupa, which looks like tiny green caterpillars, are feasting on hemlock leaves as part of their short life cycle. They gorge on leaves just before creating their cocoons. As they eat, the leaves turn yellow and fall off.
When they're feeding in this great abundance like this, it's almost like you're standing in the woods and it can sound like it's raining, but it's not actually raining. Larvae are feeding and going to the bathroom.
The feeding frenzy damages the trees, but it doesn't kill them. The sawflies only eat old needles, leaving the new growth alone. Graham and other scientists have flown aerial surveys and taken samples on several islands, Mitkoff, Kuprinoff, Prince of Wales, and Admiralty. They did see a sawfly infestation, but they're not that concerned. The main reason is because sawflies are native to the region, so they're part of the normal ecosystem, and that means there are other species that keep the sawfly populations in check. One is fungi, which infect the larvae. But this summer's hot, dry weather hasn't been a good year for them, so sawflies have flourished. Another natural sawfly control comes later in the cycle, and that's the parasitoid wasps.
Which are really, really cool. They actually lay their eggs inside these pupal cases. And so the parasitoid wasp is feeding on the pupae inside the case, and then they will eventually burst out of the case and sort of like an alien.
And Graham is hoping that some of those alien wasps will emerge from the sawfly cocoons soon. She's collected several of the cases to take back to her lab to observe. There is another insect that can pair up with the sawfly to cause problems. That's the western black-headed budworm. They feed on the tree's new growth. So if they're having an outbreak at the same time as the sawfly, that can actually kill the trees. But scientists haven't seen that this year. It would take a few years in a row of the sawfly's population to go unchecked for there to be a cause for concern. And the bugs do play an important role in the forest.
Birds eat them, rodents, you know, small mammals. And so it's an abundant food source. It's not something we would want to eradicate.
This fall, the sawfly pupae will emerge from their brown cases as tiny wasps, but not the kind that sting. They'll mate up and then lay eggs, which overwinter and hatch in the springtime. Graham and her colleagues will continue to monitor them to make sure they're damaging trees, but in their normal, good-for-the-forest way. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. A cybersecurity firm says that Alaska was targeted by hackers using computers in China. The company, Recorded Future, documents repeated attempts to connect to several networks in Alaska before and after the state sent a trade delegation to China back in May. According to the report, the scanning activity spiked when Governor Bill Walker announced the visit to China in March, and again just after the delegation left the country. The data shows that Alaska Communication Systems Group, or ACS, and Alaska Power and Telephone Company were targeted in addition to the state's Department of Natural Resources. There's evidence that the scanning came from internet connections registered to Tsinghua University in Beijing. Walker's administration is pushing back against the report. Press Secretary Austin Baird says there was web traffic targeting the state, but no hack actually happened.
The state of Alaska, like most state governments, like most businesses, like most companies that do business online or do business internationally, there's routinely anonymous activity on the perimeter of networks that amounts to someone checking if the door is locked.
Baird says the state does not believe that China was the original source of the scanning activity. He says the state contacted law enforcement as a precautionary measure, but doesn't plan to do any further investigation into the source of the web traffic. The Ketchikan-Gateway Borough Assembly reluctantly voted Wednesday to place a recall vote on the October 2nd local election there. The special assembly meeting was called after sponsors of a petition to recall school board president Trevor Shaw turned in more than enough valid signatures last week. Numerous people spoke during public comment before the assembly's vote. Four supported placing the recall in front of voters, and three opposed it. One of the speakers was Sid Hartley, who is the primary sponsor of the recall effort. She offered to answer questions from assembly members. Assemblymember Rodney Dial asked her whether she would try to recall other elected officials in the future for violating a bylaw. Hartley says, if there's a pattern of misbehavior, yes. Otherwise,
no, if somebody made one, you know, mistake or did something wrong one time, but they've shown great leadership the rest of the time, why would you touch it? You know, you'd be like, okay, you know, we'll eat this one. But this is a repetitive thing, and so it was time to act.
The grounds for a recall detailed in the petition allege that Shaw violated board bylaws by not allowing a student board member to participate in a discussion of a school board appointment. Dial also asked Hartley about two other attempted recall petitions for other school board members. Those petitions were denied for insufficient grounds. Dial says it appears the recall effort was targeting conservative members of the school board. Hartley says she was not aware of the political leanings of those board members. Shaw also addressed the assembly. He says the recall petition isn't specific enough because it doesn't include dates for the alleged action. If it was the most recent school board appointment, he says that students were allowed to participate in the discussion later in the meeting. Following public comment, Borough Clerk Casey Paxton read aloud state statutes that regulate the recall process.
If a regular election occurs within 75 days but not sooner than 45 days after submission of the petition to the governing body shall submit the recall at that election.
Ketchikan's borough attorney Glenn Brown later clarified that shall means the assembly is required to submit the recall. If the assembly refused, he says it would be in violation of state law. Ketchikan Borough Assembly member Stephen Bradford, who is an attorney, says he spent much of the afternoon researching the recall process. He says voting to place it on the ballot doesn't mean that the assembly agrees with it.
The Supreme Court has reviewed this procedure. And it has said, the Supreme Court has said, we emphasize that it is not our role, but rather that of the voters to assess the truth or the falsity of the allegations in the petition.
Most assembly members agreed, reluctantly, that they had to vote to place the recall in front of the voters. Dial, however, refused.
You know, there have been many miscarriages of justice throughout time. And people have used the excuse, I'm just following orders, and I'm not going to be one of those people. This is wrong.
The motion to place the recall question on the October 2nd local election ballot passed with a vote of 4-1. Dial voted no. Assemblymembers Sue Pickrell and Felix Wong were absent from the meeting. According to the Alaska Victimization Study, almost half of the women in Sitka have experienced domestic violence or sexual assault, but SAFE, which stands for Sitkans Against Family Violence, has found that most men in Sitka have a low awareness of this violence. So Martina Kurzer of SAFE spent 6 months tracking the local incidents of domestic violence. KCAW's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Martina Kurzer has light brown hair cut short, a broad smile, and a palpable passion for educating the public about domestic violence. She calls it interpersonal abuse, or interpersonal violence, because many people think domestic sounds outdated. She meets with me in KCAW's studio and shares the results of her 6 months of research.
In the first quarter, January through March, we had 29 situations of interpersonal violence in the police blotter, and we had 23 charges or arrests in the police report. That's substantial. And then in the second quarter of this year, we had 16 mentionings or calls to the police department about some kind of interpersonal violence, and 12 enforcement actions that resulted out of this?
In total, Sickens reported 45 cases of domestic violence, 4 stalking incidents, 3 cases of child abuse, and 1 cyber-stalking incident to the Sitka Police Department. Kurzer found these statistics by monitoring published reports in the Daily Sitka Sentinel. Lieutenant Lance Ewers of the Sitka Police Department agrees with this assessment of the frequency of domestic violence.
If I were to be asked how often do our officers investigate the crime of domestic violence, I would say multiple cases a week in our lovely town, which is a great town, and it's no different than any other place in America.
Ewers says many of those cases are from repeat offenders, and alcohol and drugs play a huge role in these disturbances.
In my law enforcement career, I couldn't even begin to count how many domestic violence investigations I've conducted. And I could probably count on both hands how many didn't have an alcohol nexus to it or a drug nexus to it. It was a sober domestic disturbance. So, I've been a cop since 1999.
But data from police reports only reveals a small percentage of domestic violence cases. This is partly because not all incidents are reported. Here's Kurzer.
So, if there are 45 cases of callers in 6 months, I must say there is probably tenfold at least of incidents of interpersonal violence in our homes.
It's also because not all forms of domestic violence are crimes. Here's Ewers.
There's physical abuse and then there's mental abuse, and they're very, very often tied together. All that mental abuse is taxing. That's hurtful. However, that's not criminal.
But Ewers says threats of physical violence are criminal. People can get arrested or incarcerated for threatening their partner with violence. Kurzer says SAFE has a wider definition of interpersonal violence, and their services are meant to help anyone experiencing any type of abuse or violence.
For SAFE and all other entities and people who work in this field, domestic violence is actually defined as a systematic way of one intimate partner to gain power and control over another. And this putting down does not have to be physical.
According to SAFE, partners threatening to take the children away or threatening to commit suicide are abuse. So are efforts to isolate a partner from their family and friends. Peg Bloomer, a Sitka domestic violence survivor, experienced many types of physical and psychological abuse.
He threatened to kill my kids. I was never allowed to go anywhere without him. He used to have this game where he would strangle me until I passed out.
But partly through SAFE, she was able to escape the relationship and its threats. Now she works for SAFE.
Because I don't want anybody to feel as alone as I felt, as terrified and helpless. And I don't see myself as a victim. I see myself as a survivor. I see every person that comes to us as a survivor. You can come back from that. You can move on and make your life a good life.
Reporting from Sitka, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
It is Friday, August the 17th, and that means it's time now for our Stocks Report with Dan Berg. He's a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Bellevue, Washington, and he's joining us now by telephone. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Angela.
What can you share with us this week?
Well, after a very shaky start, the week ended on a good note, at least for the Dow Jones average. And anybody who says that trade is not important to this market hasn't been watching. The market had its best session since April 10th on Thursday, and that was on the news that a Chinese delegation will be coming to Washington for trade talks. And so the market really did respond to that, and also to Walmart earnings. And so it looks as though next week, August 22 and 23, there'll be a mid-level delegation. And according to the Wall Street Journal today, it appears that there is some sort of a November timetable that they've agreed on. Of course, the devil's in the details, but That was what turned on the markets this week. Over in the EU, we had a little news on Greece. You may remember a few years ago, Greece, the basket case of Europe, they finally formally exited their bailout from the European Union. However, it should be noted that they got a last-minute $25 billion bridge loan, and they will be supervised to some degree by the EU for the next 40 years, according to the agreement. Also in the EU, the Brexit talks have resumed, and the stakes are getting higher and higher as the deadline gets closer. Over in emerging markets, that's where some of the real news has been lately. And once again, especially earlier this week, the lira in Turkey was in free fall, especially Monday. It dropped about 10%. That situation really hasn't changed much, although the currency stabilized somewhat toward the end of the week. Also of note, India, which is a major emerging market, that currency hit an all-time low against the U.S. dollar this week, partly in sympathy with what was going on in Turkey. I guess the market is looking at all of those emerging markets which have a great deal of foreign debt, because if you borrow in dollars and your revenues to pay for those loans are in a falling local currency, you could find yourself with some pretty steep bills. A lot of folks in Turkey now are discovering that the money that they thought they owed is now twice as much because they have to repay that. Also in China, there was some softer economic data, and there were some commentators saying, well, perhaps the Chinese are coming to the table because their economy is somewhat weaker than it was. And looking at the data this week, their unemployment rate did tick up to 5.1% from 4.8%, and also fixed asset investment, and that's the kind of stuff that goes into factories or, you know, government spending on a highway. Those haven't been this slow for nearly 20 years. So overall, emerging markets are down about 10% year-to-date, which is a contrast to what's gone on in the United States. So for the week, the Dow Jones closed at 25,669. That was a 356-point gain for the week, all of that on Thursday, about 1.4% for the week. The NASDAQ was a little weaker as tech stocks have suffered. NASDAQ closed at 78.16, down about 0.3%, and then S&P was up a little bit, 0.6% to 28.50. Over in the commodities patch, that is something else which has been on the weak side lately. Oil slipped back to $65.88 per barrel from $67.63. There is a correlation between a strong U.S. dollar and commodity prices, certainly, and also some commentators are saying oil is drifting a little lower on economic concerns, particularly in emerging markets. Gold really has been weak all year, and this is one of its worst weeks. Gold closed down to 1,176. That was down from 1,215 at this time last week. I looked at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute commentary after I saw that gold price, and the commodity basket, which most people follow, is also off nearly 10% since its high in May. So it's not just gold, but it's a variety of commodities. So for the bond market, the Treasury yields were pretty much unchanged, 30-year at 3.02 and the 10-year at 2.87. One question that people have been asking lately are, why are long-term yields so low? And again, we can come back to what we have been talking about regarding folks exiting some of the overseas investments in emerging markets. As folks fly out, take assets out of emerging markets, they generally buy strong country currencies. The dollar is one of them, the Japanese yen, Swiss francs. That's called the flight to safety, and that is probably one factor in why interest rates are low, because if you're going to buy assets in U.S. dollars, the obvious thing is a U.S. Treasury bond.
Well, thanks for sharing that information with us. What about individual stocks that you're keeping your eyes on?
Well, we had some interesting news in at the end here of earnings season. Walmart, symbol WMT, really knocked it out of the park. That stock closed up 9% this week to $97.85. It looks as though Amazon actually may have some competition here. Both grocery sales and online sales were strong for Walmart. Speaking of the internet, the largest capitalization internet stock in China, symbol TCEHY, on the over-the-counter market here in this country called Tencent, they announced their first lower quarterly earnings ever since they've been public, and the stock tanked almost 30% to 44.13, where it ended the week. By the way, Tencent is the largest gaming platform on the planet, so that's definitely one stock to watch. Macy's announced earnings, symbol M, that closed down sharply to 36.03 on a weaker outlook. NVIDIA, symbol NVDA, the chip maker for gaming and other applications, closed down 5% today to $244.25. That's $244. They lowered their guidance, and NVIDIA sells the sophisticated chips that go into manufacturing cryptocurrencies, and apparently with the weakness in cryptocurrencies, that business is drying up. Also in the tech area, Cisco, CSCO, announced earnings. That was a good report, and that was up to $45.50 to end the week. Here in the Northwest, we had some news. Nordstrom, symbol JWN, really was a standout in retail stocks, even as much as Walmart. Nordstrom was up 13% today to $59.18. They look like they are not only making money on the rack, but same-store sales in their full-price stores were also up about 4% from the previous quarter, and their online sales are doing well. So I guess retail isn't dead after all. This is a different conversation than we had about a year ago. Boeing, symbol BA, which is considered a proxy for trade worries, along with Caterpillar, a symbol BA, that closed up to 346.40, and that was one of the reasons the Dow Jones Industrial Average did as well as it did. And then finally, Alaska Airlines, symbol ALK, closed at $65 even.
Okay. All right, so what's coming up next week?
Well, for international news, obviously, the trade talks will be front and center. There are additional tariffs that are scheduled to go into effect next week on $16 billion in additional Chinese goods. The Chinese have decided to match that. We'll see if they actually follow through. They probably will, people are saying. However, the additional $200 billion that was talked about under Washington, those are out for now. But the implementation of those tariffs will be news. Also, we have some surveys of the overall economy, the PMI surveys. Regarding company news and earnings, where it's petering out now at the end of the earnings season, but we do have Lowe's Hardware, Target, and then the second largest internet stock in China, Alibaba, symbol BABA, will be announcing, and that will be of interest.
Okay, well, thanks so much for joining us this week, Dan, and we'll check in with you again next Friday.
Yeah, thank you, Angela.
Okay, take care. Dan Berg is a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Bellevue, Washington, and he joins us every Friday.
Listeners are reminded that the information provided is general in nature and may not apply to their personal investment situation. Individuals should consult with their chosen financial professional before making any decisions. Investment products and services are offered through Wells Fargo Advisors, a trade name used by Wells Fargo Clearing Services, LLC, member SIPC. Neither Wells Fargo Advisors nor its financial professionals are legal or tax advisors.
This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening. Coming up on KFSK, I'll have the weather forecast, community calendar events and announcements, the fisheries report, and fish news with Fish Radio. Then after all of that, it'll be the Street Beat Show today, hosted by Brian Varela. That'll take us to 2:35 for After School Notes with GOAT. At 4 o'clock, it's NPR's All Things Considered. Another local newscast at 4:30. At 6, news from around the state with Alaska News Nightly. At 6:30, Milk Crate Sessions with Pete Brantwis. At 9 o'clock, Beale Street Caravan. At 10, Radio Free Petersburg with Tony and Tracy. And at midnight, it's the World Cafe.